This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime alert, hourly update, breaking crime news now.
I'm Jackie Howard. A Minnesota man arrested in connection with an alleged sexual assault of a 51-year-old Minnesota woman. According to Ramsey County Sheriff's Office, during the assault, the victim threw the perp's glasses on the ground, fighting to get away. The missing glasses led his family to eventually turn him in to authorities. Tristan Allen Larritz, 21, is accused of sexually assaulting the woman on a sidewalk in public. Larritz snuck up on the victim while she was out for a walk. He's accused of then dragging her off the sidewalk into a secluded area and sexually assaulting her. The female victim was on the phone with a friend when she was allegedly attacked. She yelled out to the friend to call 911, according to the complaint. Following his arrest, Larritz reportedly admitted to the assault, saying he saw the woman walking and then thought, F it, since I'm a virgin, before attacking her. Larritz now awaiting charges. Online records show Levitt's now awaiting charges. More crime and justice news after this.
I'm Sydney Sumner. In a harrowing case out of Ohio, a juvenile judge gave a stern warning after a boy failed to show for court on serious felony charges. A warrant would be issued for his arrest the next time he misses a hearing. The boy's 10-year-old female co-defendant appeared at an arraignment in the Cuyahoga County Juvenile Court before Judge Kristen Sweeney on Wednesday on numerous felony charges. Her attorney, public defender Caitlin Idoine, said the girl didn't rape a 5-year-old autistic child found scalped and beaten last month in Cleveland. Idoine also said the child likely has issues understanding the charges against her.
We have filed a competency motion, as we do have significant concerns for her ability to understand the statutory language of the complaint, as well as her legal rights in the proceedings today.
The 9-year-old boy's attorney, Edward Borkowski, asked for a continuance after saying the family had car issues, preventing them from getting to court. Both children are facing charges that include attempted murder, rape, felonious assault, kidnapping, and strangulation. The incident happened on September 13th at a field in Cleveland near East 148th Street and St. Clair Avenue. Police found the victim naked and lying in a fetal position behind the Collinwood Athletic Complex. Her mother said in court Wednesday that she hoped the judge would consider the victim in her decision on how to punish the defendants.
This type of behavior doesn't deserve grace. They knew what they were doing, and they was okay with that. They even play after, not caring about my baby.
Ontavia Kennebrew, the victim's mother, previously said on social media that her daughter had been scalped, assaulted, and beaten after she dropped her off at a family member's home. Kennebrew said her daughter walked out of the front door on the day in question, and when she saw her again, her daughter had been so badly beaten, she was unrecognizable. Quote, "My daughter was not my daughter. Her hair was scalped from her head. She had bruises and blood all over her body. Her eyes were filled with blood. Her lips and mouth were filled with blood. Her nails had debris and dirt in them." Several other children reportedly told police that a 10-year-old girl led the victim to the field where she hit the victim with a rock and undressed her. The children then allegedly sexually assaulted her. One of the witnesses told police that the defendants urinated on the 5-year-old and ripped one of her braids out. First responders took her to the Rainbow Babies and Children's Hospital, where she reportedly remained for several days.
Since this horrific act was done to her, she's just been going through it, and that's how it should be for her offenders. They should not get grace or a break to return home and get prepared for their life to change, because not only did they been given enough time already, nothing prepared my baby for her life to be changed. She didn't get time.
Assistant County Prosecutor Oscar Alborez said, at a minimum, the female defendant should be on home confinement with an ankle monitor, given the victim's condition. Idoine asked the judge to release the 10-year-old to her family. She also argued that putting an ankle monitor on her would cause a potential safety issue.
If she is put on an ankle monitor, that will become public knowledge. And if that is, and if someone figures out where she is living and they know that she is court ordered to be there, that could pose a potential safety risk to her and her family.
The judge noted the 10-year-old's parents were not present in court with her. A female family member accompanied the child to the hearing, but the exact relationship to the victim is unclear. Sweeney disagreed with the defense's argument on home confinement and ankle monitoring, but did approve their request for a mental competency evaluation.
One is the serious nature of these charges. Secondly, And I'm just going to note this for the record. We don't have a parent present in court today for MH. And so I am not sure what the living circumstances are outside of what was discussed in the closure hearing.
Sweeney also agreed to a continuance for the no-show child and scheduled a hearing for next week.
I'm Drew Nelson. An explosive press conference in Dearborn Heights, Michigan exposes years of alleged sexual, physical, and psychological abuse inside Vista Maria, a once-celebrated, soon-to-close residential treatment facility for at-risk girls. Attorney Michael Jafar announcing plans for a sweeping lawsuit on behalf of more than a dozen former residents, calling the institution, quote, a real-life Hunger Games.
It reveals a culture where power was abused, dignity was stripped away, and the very people sworn to protect inflicted harm and trauma on these young women. This wasn't care, it was control. It wasn't shelter, it was imprisonment.
Representing between 13 and 15 women who lived at Vista Maria at different times, Jafar says their stories are strikingly similar over the years. Guards allegedly forced girls to fight each other, cut off their clothes with scissors, and ordered them to sleep naked under surveillance cameras while claiming it was for their protection. Some were allegedly sexually assaulted or invited to run away and live with guards.
These girls were not residents. They were child vulnerable prisoners.
Jafar revealing that Vista Maria, which described itself as a nonprofit dedicated to, quote, healing and empowering vulnerable youth, was very well funded. According to financial disclosures, the facility ended 2024 with over $60 million in net assets. Dearborn Heights Police Chief Ahmed Haydar says he's glad the place is closing.
500 calls for services is insane. The police should never, ever respond to a home or a business in the city of Dearborn Heights 500 times in 1 year.
Attorney Jafar says his firm is finalizing interviews with former residents and expects to file suit within 60 days. The allegations come just weeks after Vista Maria announced it would end its residential youth program by December 19th, citing its inability to provide the psychiatric level of care most girls now require. The facility, which traces its roots to 1883, plans to continue other operations like foster care and juvenile justice services, but all 154 residential staffers will be laid off. Jafar says most of the women he represents never met one another, yet they recounted the same acts of abuse and named some of the same guards. He compared the consistency of their stories to puzzle pieces. Claims include being forced to fight until one lost consciousness, beaten by staff, and sexually assaulted by male employees who claimed to be their protectors. While Vista Maria's board maintains that it provided decades of service to vulnerable youth, both Jafar and Haydar described the facility's closure as overdue. Vista Maria leadership has claimed the decision to shut the program down was driven by changing mental health needs, not the mounting scandal.
I'm Nicole Parton. Democrats on the House Oversight Committee have called on former Prince Andrew, now referred to as Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, to answer questions about his connection to Jeffrey Epstein. Powerful individuals have escaped justice for far too long, stated Representative Robert Garcia, the committee's ranking member. He went on to say now former Prince Andrew has a chance to be honest and bring justice to the victims. Oversight Democrats are committed to ensuring accountability and transparency for those affected by Epstein and his associates. Andrew lost his royal titles at the hands of his brother, King Charles, due to his links with Epstein, who died in custody while facing federal charges for sex trafficking in 2019. In a letter addressed to Andrew, committee Democrats noted, "Your friendship with Mr. Epstein reportedly began in 1999 and continued after his 2008 conviction for trafficking minors for sex." They requested that he participate in a transcribed interview to shed light on the crimes associated with Epstein's accomplices. The letter also urged Andrew to respond by November 20, emphasizing the seriousness and urgency of the matter. The Epstein investigation has sparked significant political controversy, particularly because of his associations with influential figures. Andrew, the third child of Queen Elizabeth, was named in a 2015 lawsuit by Virginia Giuffre, who alleged she was trafficked to him when she was just 17. In 2021, she filed a lawsuit against Andrew, who has consistently denied any allegations of misconduct. After hearing from Epstein's victims and through the recent public disclosure of documents, it's crucial for Andrew to cooperate with ongoing investigations, said Representative Submaraniam from Virginia. If he is innocent, he has an opportunity to clear his name. If not, our inquiry will reveal the truth and the victims will finally see the justice they deserve. The royal family's decision to strip Andrew of his titles indicates there is more to this narrative. Epstein's death by suicide in a New York jail has been surrounded by significant debate and speculation. Ghislaine Maxwell, a co-conspirator of Epstein, who also has ties to Andrew, is currently serving a 20-year sentence for her role in child sex trafficking.
I'm Jennifer Gould. What should have been a simple drive-through transaction ended in a terrifying armed confrontation when a Florida McDonald's worker allegedly traded a McChicken order for five counts of aggravated assault with a firearm. This absurd escalation unfolded at approximately 12:30 in the morning at the Northwest 183rd Street location in Miami Gardens. Victim Chayton Timmons spoke to WPLG 10 News.
I told him, I said, listen, his mama want to make McGriddles or McChicken? Because this is about to be a McFunneral at this McDonald's. I don't play these type of games.
The unsettling situation began with an agonizing wait. Timmons and her family, including her pregnant goddaughter and one-year-old child, had been held up for over an hour for their pre-ordered food. According to Timmons, when they finally engaged with cashier Anthony Markeith Elliott III, the 19-year-old responded with a McFlurry of rage and hostile defiance. Miami Gardens police reports detail how the argument quickly boiled over, transitioning from verbal dispute to physical menace when Elliott allegedly stepped from the window and flashed a handgun concealed in his waistband. Ignoring the threat, Timmons and her family continued to challenge the worker's stubborn attitude. That defiance allegedly caused Elliott to ratchet up the violence. He drew the silver handgun with a black grip and pointed it directly at the occupants of the car, including the toddler. But Timmons, a previous shooting victim, was instantly ready for a standoff. Instead of backing down, she immediately called police, declaring that officers needed to arrive quickly because the situation was speeding towards a fatal conclusion. Timmons later told reporters that the cashier, quote, must have wanted a death wish, end quote, adding a stark, unforgettable pun to the unfolding drama. She believed the cashier must have been planning a, quote, unquote, McFuneral. The quick response of law enforcement led to the employee's swift arrest. Confronted by officers, Elliott reportedly confessed to pulling the weapon and identified the location where he had stored the firearm, inside the restaurant, a detail corroborated by the store manager. The gun recovered matched the description given by the victims. Elliott, a Miami resident, was subsequently charged with five counts of aggravated assault with a firearm and was released after posting a $1,000 bond. No word if he has any priors or if he is still employed after all the Mick drama. For the latest crime and justice news, follow the Crime Alert Hourly Update on your favorite podcast app. With this Crime Alert, I'm Jennifer Gould.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.